Husker Doc Talk Podcast 2016, presented by the Remington Trophy, episode 17. Greetings and welcome to another edition of the Husker Doc Talk Podcast. I'm Travis Justice. Good to have you along for another edition as the season is hitting the home stretch. We are at senior week as Nebraska gets ready to take on Maryland. Joining me once again, former Husker All-American, the one, the only, Dr. Rob Zadiska. What's up?
Okay, what the heck got into Iowa?
What do you mean? What, you're starting with Iowa? This is the Husker Doc Talk Podcast.
I know,
podcast.
But good Lord.
You know, Rob, on my radio show, what I do on KXNO in Des Moines, 1460, every day from 6 to 8, somebody asked me what has to happen for Iowa to win. And I didn't think it was going to happen, but I said this is what I said had to happen. They had to control the clock, they had to create turnovers, and they needed something freaky to happen to go their way. So at the end of the day, they got a safety, they got a phantom face mask, they got a couple turnovers.
The hand hit it. I mean, it should have probably been a 5-yard.
Yeah,
face
but still that. So and then they got the turnovers, and believe it or not, they had those timeouts after the Beathard INT that was forced Michigan to punt, and lo and behold, it came away in it. I will say this before we get into the Nebraska game: I was not impressed at all with Michigan's offense during that game.
That would had to have been one of the most stagnant performances I've seen. And it's kind of interesting because they just looked machine-like all season long. And it's not like they've played this incredibly tough schedule. But, they beat Wisconsin, which is a pretty good team.
But they beat them 14-7.
Yeah.
A defensive battle. It was just a lot of things had to go the right way. I mean, you look at both those offenses. I think Michigan had, 200 yards of total offense. Iowa had, 237, and Akron-Wadley had 167 of that, if you count on the ground and then rushing, receiving. So it threw the Big Ten for a loop because now and we'll get into it a little bit later on.
The East is a mess.
The East is an absolute mess, as if – because if Ohio State beat Michigan and Penn State wins out, it's Penn State going to the Big Ten championship game. It won't be the Buckeyes.
Dude, and we were talking about how James Franklin's on the hot seat.
He was when the season started.
4 or 5 weeks ago.
You know what the difference is? He started running his quarterback. He started showing a mobile quarterback. And you know how you always talked about how Nebraska and Michigan State are always just good matchups? That's a good matchup for Nebraska.
Yeah.
I look at Iowa and Michigan. Iowa can't. This is why I think Nebraska is going to have the edge against Iowa, is because Iowa can't stop a mobile quarterback. Tommy's too mobile for Iowa, and I can get into that later on.
You know, a so-so Nebraska offense last year put up big numbers in that Nebraska Iowa game. Tommy kept handing the ball over to Iowa's defense at the end of every.
Go
drive.
To the Penn State game this year. They just have a hard Northwestern. They just have a hard time stopping mobile quarterbacks. Hell, Nebraska's defense for the longest time had a hard time stopping a mobile quarterback.
Which in Michigan is they're like Wisconsin. We're gonna put a Riker Fike-esque mannequin in the backfield and let people tee off on them.
But. All right, enough about Iowa. We'll get into them maybe in the second half of the podcast. But we got to talk. We are starting the evening drinking beer. And Rob picked tonight's selection. He picks most every week. And he went to Oklahoma to get this week's beer. And I'm going to be honest, since it's not a local brewery, it's Prairie Artisan Ales. It's a Prairie Weiss, which they label as a sour wheat beer. It's basically water that has a little sour to it and no beer taste whatsoever.
And this beer needs... This would be, honestly, I really think it would be good if there was beer in it.
Yes. There's it's water, isn't it?
I'm a little let down. I mean, I picked it up. I was at the store. I thought, this looks new. It's different. It's got a kind of a cool looking label on it.
Yeah.
I'm thinking sour wheat beer. I'm like, crap, Travis and I like sours. This is going to be the greatest night ever, and then we're sorely let down.
Yeah, so, they've got a great-looking bottle, a great-looking label, but just be aware, if you go to the beer store and you see something from Prairie Artisan Ales out of Oklahoma, it is, well, it's not the best.
You know, if if you're new to this stuff, it's probably not a bad starter because it's not overpowering at all.
Yeah. So what you and I we're having the Prairie Weiss, and then we're gonna chase it with a Flanders wild sour Flanders Red from Distill, which is like the most sour beer you can get.
Yeah, I was gonna say we're cleansing the palate with literally a punch in the
face. But you know what's good? I'm glad we didn't like a beer because I think we've liked every beer we've had this year.
We've had a couple that we thought were it's okay.
Yeah. But I just want everybody to know, we're not like the Omaha World Herald food critic that likes everything that she writes about. We actually give honest opinions about the beer. Yeah, it's not all good. And this beer, it works, but it's just not something
I'm not going to not drink it if somebody gives me one for free.
But you're not going to buy it again.
No.
Hey, the Husker Doc Talk podcast is presented by the Remington Trophy. The Remington Trophy is presented annually to the nation's top center. Named after former Husker great Dave Remington, the Remington Trophy banquet will take place January 14th, 2017 at the Rococo Theater in Lincoln. This year's big announcement, well, the featured speaker is Tony Richardson, a 16-year NFL veteran who retired after the 2010 season. Not bad for a guy who was not even drafted coming out of Auburn. He spent 10 seasons with the Kansas City Chiefs. This year's Ford Legends Award winner is Carl Mock. He played in the National Football League for 13 years. He retired and is now living in Lincoln. He was also a longtime NFL assistant. His daughter is a former Husker swimmer, also lives in Lincoln with her husband and kids. The Remington Trophy presentation benefits the Boomer Esiason Foundation, where Dave is the president. Cystic fibrosis is a chronic disease that affects the lungs and digestive system of about 30,000 children and adults in the United States, 70,000 worldwide. This year's CF speaker at the Remington Trophy presentation will be Nicholas Bell. The Nebraskan has an inspirational story to tell. Coming up a little bit later on, the Remington Trophy watch list spotlight. We'll welcome Husker Hounds to the Doc Talk podcast this season. Boy, season's going fast, too. We encourage you to go see Scotty Strunk and all three of us Husker Hound stores, which is the best place to buy Nebraska gifts and officially licensed apparel. Here are some of the early Christmas deals now through this Sunday. I just got this on the Husker Hounds Facebook page. Now through this Sunday, director chairs, regular $90, you can get them for $50. A crib sheet set, regular $130, you can now get it for $75. Tom Osborne, autographed football and decorative display case, normally $175, now you can pick it up for $100. Cornhole game, regularly $300, now on sale for $160. Tons of other specials starting today, running through Sunday at Husker Hounds. Get to one of three Omaha area locations and load up, including the new Husker Hounds store, 149th and Maple, which is now open. For online orders, go to huskerhounds.com. We want to thank HuskerMax.com for sharing the Husker Doc Talk podcast. For up-to-date Husker news, make sure to visit HuskerMax.com. Rob, the Huskers snapped the 2-game losing streak. They beat Minnesota. Good game. Getting the win.
Yeah, winning was big, yes. And especially given the injury situation with concussion. Then late in the, I mean, Tommy got knocked around a bit at the end of the game. So between the concussion and then kind of the tweaks here and there, I know that ankle's hurting him. He kind of had a minor hamstring injury on that final touchdown as well. The guy's an absolute warrior. I mean, the guy just absolutely battles. But holy criminy, God, they're running on fumes now.
They are.
I've said that about a million times in reference to the offensive line, but geez, the team on the whole is.
They're running on fumes. Tommy's not going to practice most of this week because of the hamstring injury. It's senior day, so you know they're going to play him. But boy, do you try to get a lead against Maryland, which is not a good football team, and get him the hell off the field?
I think that's probably what they're going to do. I think they'll try and be a little bit cautious. They'll tell him, hey, if it's hurting, don't take off sprinting. If you feel it tightening up, you know, just slide, hit the deck. But I'm betting they play him. I bet he goes out there for the first couple of series, at the very least, to try and maybe test out Maryland's defense a little bit, maybe get them off balance. And if Nebraska gets a lead, I think they maybe put Riker Fife in, with the idea being that you rest up Tommy a little bit for the Iowa game, which, you know, we mentioned it a couple minutes ago. All of a sudden, Iowa looks like they've at least got the capability to show up and play football.
Well, you know, it's funny, and we've had this discussion over and over and over again. I was really not that much different than they were last year, except for the fact that the bounces haven't gone their way.
And Nebraska's not much different. You know, you keep saying Iowa's this season has kind of mirrored Nebraska's season last year.
And vice versa.
Yeah, that Michigan game for Iowa was Nebraska's Michigan State last year.
You know, it's interesting because that, you know, going back to the Iowa game, that was Iowa's first win over a ranked team at home since 2011. And I think you could make the argument that that win almost, to a lot of Iowa fans, felt better than going 12. Because last year they didn't really play anybody. I mean,
It was a pretty vanilla schedule.
Pretty vanilla schedule. So I think a win over a number three team, and maybe Nebraska last year too, that's a good correlation because Michigan State ended up going to the college football playoff. It shows you that the margin of error is razor thin.
And it is for everybody. Yeah. I mean, look at Michigan. You got a team that was a
2, 3, 4, and 5 all lost.
Yeah, Michigan, and it wasn't like it was great games for these teams. I mean, if you were going to say Clemson was going to lose, you would have thought it would have been against like Louisville. You thought it was going to be against Florida State. You thought it was going to be in one of these big games for these guys.
I didn't think it was going to be at home against Pitt.
That would have been the last game I would have picked. And Michigan losing. I guarantee you nobody would have looked at it and gone, yeah, they're going down against Iowa.
Perfect example is this. Before the season started, Michigan was a 3-point favorite on the road. When that game kicked off, Michigan was a 24-point favorite. 24.
That's insane. So, which in some of it you got to figure is Vegas trying to push betting numbers one way or the other.
I think when numbers move like that, that's because money's going on a team. I think you try to even it out a little bit, but
I think Michigan and some of it, you know, I kept wanting to ask you. I was going to text you or maybe put it out on Twitter that it's like, hey, Travis, so it's. Is Michigan all smoke and mirrors, or did Iowa get...
No,
and it's one of those... I honestly, I don't think Michigan's all smoke and mirrors. I think they're a pretty good team.
Peppers was ineffective.
Yeah.
And it was just... It was a matchup, and turnovers, penalties, everything that had to go a certain way. And you've seen this... Nebraska's had that happen a couple times. Things just... When things go a certain way, they go in your favor. I mean, do I think if Iowa and Michigan played 10 times, Iowa would win 50-50. I don't. I think Michigan would win 9 of the 10, and that just happened. It's kind of like, you know, Nebraska and Ohio State. Do I think it would be 62-3 all the time? No, but I think Ohio State would win the majority of those matchups.
Agreed. I agree.
So, you know, when you look at, was there anything, let's start with what you liked coming off the Minnesota game. What you saw in the Minnesota game?
You know, Minnesota had a chance to win this game. I mean, this was not a gimme game. I think Minnesota's, they've got a big offensive line. Mitch Leidner, who, you know, I'm like the ninth person to say this, but it seems like he's been there for about 7 seasons now. You got a guy that's been a bit of a thorn in Nebraska's side. He's been able to run the ball well against Nebraska. I thought Nebraska did a reasonable job of keeping him in the pocket. He ran a little bit, he scrambled a little bit, but you didn't see these 42-yard scrambles by the guy just absolutely gashing Nebraska. I thought Nebraska's defense did a nice job bouncing back in regards to kind of – I thought they did a good job of shutting down Minnesota's running game. Now, again, I don't think anybody's putting Minnesota's running game out there as an upper echelon Big Ten running game. It's just not. It's just they just don't have the overall talent that, say, an Ohio State has. But they're not bad.
Yeah.
I mean, they're basically kind of like Wisconsin Junior. They got a big offensive line. Is it as good as Wisconsin's? No, it's not. They got a solid running back. Is he good as Corey Clements and the guy whose name I can't pronounce from Wisconsin? No, he's not. They got a quarterback who is an okay scrambler. He's an okay passer and a pretty good scrambler, rather. Is he JT Barrett? No, he's definitely not. So you've got a team that can do some damage, and I thought Nebraska's defense did a pretty good job against
them. You know, they held them to 265 total yards. They passed for 180, rushed for 85. I mean,
did a good job defensively containing them on the offense, and I thought especially coming off of just an absolute just talk about a disaster. That Ohio State game was an utter disaster. And I thought Nebraska's defense bounced back pretty well. I mean, it's one of those things where you absolutely get reamed by Ohio State. You start thinking, okay, there's some holes here. There's some chinks in the armor that other teams are going to exploit. And you didn't see that happen. Now, obviously, again, I will throw out there that Minnesota doesn't have the tools to exploit those chinks like Ohio State does, but they're not a horrible team either. I mean, they were 7-2 coming in, and you made the point to me they haven't played exactly the toughest schedule, but they were a 7-2 team just like Nebraska coming into this, and you don't get to 7-2 by being a horrible team. They're definitely not Maryland. They're definitely not Rutgers. So they're an okay team, and so I was happy about that.
Did you see what Rutgers is doing now?
I don't know if I care.
Yeah, well, it's true, but I just think it's kind of funny. Now, like, they're in the newspaper, they're, like, putting pictures of little puppies. They're using dogs as therapy dogs for Rutgers fans because the season's so bad. Rutgers is just
I thought horrible. That was Clinton fans that was getting therapy dogs.
You know, what? Nebraska penalized 8 times for 81 yards.
There was a lot of flags thrown, which I went to the game. I watched the game. A little disappointed in the referee. And that was one of those games where I sat there watching it thinking, this is just a sloppily refereed game. I think the Big Ten has one halfway decent officiating crew, and they weren't in Lincoln.
Well, I think a lot of people would say that, you know, I asked you a couple weeks ago if officiating was getting better or worse from when you played. I mean, I saw a roughing the center call the other day.
I saw that too.
Most people in America went, what? Most people don't know there's such a rule as roughing the center.
Now, was that on a special teams play?
Yeah, it was on a punt.
Yeah, you can't. That one I do know exists.
Yeah, but once you come up, you're fair game, right?
Yeah, to my understanding, correct. and some of the penalties, I mean, it was stupid stuff by Nebraska. The 12 players on the field on a punt. That was actually a game-changing penalty. Nebraska had them stop. Minnesota's punting. They had, which at the time, when we were in the stands at the game, they announced it as it was not a legal motion. What's the?
False start?
Not a false offsides. Start. Not offsides.
Illegal procedure?
Oh, thank you. Illegal procedure.
Just going through everything I know.
There you go. In the stadium, they announced it as illegal procedure on the punting team. And we're sitting there going, did they move? Well, no, that'd be a legal motion. It was a legal procedure. And I'm like, what the hell is a legal procedure on a punting team? Well, it turns out it was 12 guys on the field. It's stupid penalty. I think Bruce Reed even I myself bagged on him a little bit on Twitter. Turns out that basically it was sort of a conglomerate that they had this special defensive punt call in where basically most of the defense stays on the field and one extra guy happened to get caught in the mix. So that being said, though, Minnesota gets the ball back because of that illegal procedure on the punting team penalty. They went on to score. And so I'm sorry, on the punt, illegal procedure on punt return for Nebraska, rather. Minnesota was forced to punt. So Nebraska had 12 guys on their return team, and that's what it was. But Minnesota went on to score after that penalty. You know, Nebraska stops them there, and I think they end up staying a couple scores ahead of Minnesota most of that game, as opposed to being tied going into the fourth quarter and needing a late score to take the lead. And then even a little bit later, needing the interception to preserve that lead. That was a huge penalty, and I think it completely changed the face of the game. I think Nebraska probably beat Minnesota worse than what the score showed.
That's happened a couple times this year.
It has, but the game kind of came down to just, I mean, the reason the game was so close, I think, it had a lot to do with that one damn penalty, and it was wholly Nebraska's fault. It wasn't, I mean, that wasn't bad officiating. That was just stupidity on Nebraska's fault.
Hey, if you like what Dr. Rob is saying, you should hear him online. You can follow him on Twitter at Doc Talk Sports. That's at Doc Talk Sports on Twitter. So he's usually pretty active. Ooh.
That would be the Flanders Red.
That's the Flanders Red. And this is actually like kind of a red beer, but it is extreme. You're going to go from like watered down sour to like potent sour.
To nap on your couch.
Yeah, to like balsamic vinegar. Well, that's only like 4.5% alcohol.
Yeah, it's really not. That's the one thing with these sours. There's not a lot of alcohol in these things.
You know, you and I are freaks because we both like the sours, and I blame you for turning because it was the Lafalie last year. But they're summer drinks. You know, you and I don't get. I can drink a stout, but it's not my.
I'll drink this stuff all year round because you can. The great thing about a sour. It pairs outstandingly. I'm going full on beer snob here. It pairs outstandingly with really heavy food. You got like a like barbecue. You've got
ribs.
You got a stroganoff. Good winter food there.
Man, I haven't had a stroganoff in years.
Love beef stroganoff. This would be great with a chili.
Okay,
this would be a great beer with a chili. Like a pasta with like a really heavy meat sauce would be really good with.
All right.
Kind of like a meat ravioli. This would be.
So you said what you liked about the Minnesota game. What didn't you like? Besides the officiating.
You know, season long and still up to this very point, I'm being a little generous with Nebraska because I'm looking at last year, I'm looking at this year. I thought last year Nebraska was a vastly better team than what the record showed.
Okay, I would agree with you.
You know, they were one of those teams that, again, they were – I remember going through and looking at the regular season. There was probably – I think they – what was the regular season record? 6-7?
Was it, or was it 5 wins?
Well, I'm sorry. Regular season was 5 wins. Yeah. So it was 5-7 going into the bowl game. They beat UCLA.
So 6-7.
6-7. There was five of those 7 losses. I remember at one point we actually went through and realized that I think 5 of those 7 losses, depending on which plays you took into consideration, and I'm not talking about the opponent scoring. I'm talking about penalties, turnovers, things like that. They were between 1-3 plays per game from finishing 11-2 last year. And I think Nebraska, and we talked about the fact, when we say 11-2, I'm not referencing the fact that, they're a top 5 team in the country. I'm saying they're like a 12th or 13th ranked 11-2 team. And we're seeing roughly kind of the same on-field product this year in terms of overall production. It's just that a lot of these plays are now going their way. I think the schedule this year, in hindsight, I was going to say is a little bit easier than last year, but truthfully, I think last year's was an easier schedule. You didn't have Wisconsin, you didn't have Ohio State on the schedule last year, and I think those are two very good teams. But I think to answer your question, the point I'm trying to make is that I think Nebraska's a better team than maybe what people are giving them credit for. They're 8-2 right now.
I think people are giving them good credit.
I do too. I think there's a lot of Nebraska fans who are really worried about the state of the program still. I think they look at that Ohio State game and are a little bit worried. And I'm looking at it going, good God, this is a team that is just utterly decimated. And you ask what I don't like about it. I don't like the injuries. I don't like the lack of depth. I don't like the fact that we've got really one going into the season starting upperclassman on the offensive line and Utter. I just absolutely blanked. Is David Neville a junior or a senior? I thought David was a junior. But you've got basically one senior starter on that offensive line when you were going into the season in Dylan Utter, who, I hate to say it, the poor guy got absolutely lit up against Minnesota. I don't know if he's fighting injuries. I mean, somebody on Twitter made the comment that it looks like he was playing with one leg and one arm, and it really did. I mean, the guy got blasted on a safety on a third and short where Nebraska got dropped, and that safety knocked Utter backwards about a yard and a half onto his back and then made the tackle for about a yard and a half gain when they needed about three for the first down. But you've got Whitaker, you got Cole Conrad, you got some of these other guys on the offensive line who going into the year, and I've said this before, were guys who would have been second, third string guys who are now starting because of the injuries and the lack of upperclassmen depth on that offensive line. I mean, it's mind-blowing to me the lack of depth that's there.
Neville's a junior.
Okay, so Utter is. He's the lone senior starter on that offensive line. You can't blame Riley for that.
No.
I mean, that's and one of my knocks against Pelini, one of the areas that I thought he did not recruit really well was linemen, offensive linemen. I thought he did a solid job on defensive linemen. But I thought the one area where he really they just didn't do a good job was recruiting very good numbers of top quality offensive linemen. And I think this is what you end up with, where you got a bunch of younger guys starting playing, but you get a couple of injuries in there. The injuries to guys like Gerald Foster and Tanner Farmer have been just absolutely devastating on that line. I don't know what's going on with Michael Decker. I would absolutely love to see him play, but you're not even seeing him getting any playing time. I don't know if he's got an injury. I don't know if it's a case where he just hasn't developed a good comprehension of the playbook, the ability to read the defenses to the extent that Riley and Kavanaugh want him to be able to do so. But he's a guy that I'd love to see in at center, because if you go through that Minnesota game, the number of times Utter got lit up at center, it's almost embarrassing. I shouldn't say it's almost. It's flat out embarrassing.
So you're saying he's not going to win the Remington Trophy?
God, you know, if there was a guy who, if you looked at him 2.5 years ago and said he shouldn't even be here, but he worked his ever-loving ass off, and because of that, he is here award, he'd win it in a heartbeat. But he's not going to win the Remington Trophy.
Speaking of the Remington Trophy, this week's Remington Trophy Spotlight shines on Jake Bennett from Colorado State. Now, before you go, huh? This guy started all 10 games at center this year. He's a Rams offensive line, is just allowing 1.2 sacks per game, which is 15th best in the country. Behind the Rams offensive line, freshman quarterback Colin Hill is ranked 39th in the country in pass efficiency. I mean, the Rams, he helped block the way for 569 total yards of offense, including 245 on the ground against earlier in the year in a win over UNC. They blocked 369 yards of total offense against Minnesota. So they ran the ball effectively against Minnesota. Here's a guy that gets stuck at, you know, I'm not going to call the Mountain West a mid-major, but it's not a Power 5. And sometimes some of those guys get lost in the mix. I mean, he started, left guard last year, some games at center. He's not a household name. He's not going to win. But it's just we're shining the spotlight, and he's one of them.
He's an awfully good football player. Well, I mean, okay. So last year, Jeff Saturday.
Yes. Who was the featured speaker?
Featured speaker.
Yes.
Absolute stud. Bubble Hall of Famer in the NFL, in my opinion. Don't know if he's...
Yeah. Well, he was the Ford Legends Award winner last year.
Yeah, he was the Ford Legends Award winner.
Yeah.
Bubble Hall of Famer in the NFL. Kind of... I mean, the fact coming out of... He was North Carolina
guy. Yep.
Coming out of North Carolina, I mean, he was like the Kurt Warner of centers.
Yeah.
This guy's kind of like that. I mean, he's one of these guys that I think if he finds the right coach and the right team, could end up having basically...
He's a 6'3", 310-pound junior.
Saturday's like 6'1", 285 coming out of college. Took Peyton Manning to Super Bowls, went up to Green Bay, played very well there also, twilight of his career. But he's one of these kind of guys who I think very good ball player, but you got a guy coming out of high school, went to a smaller program, and just doesn't have a whole lot of recognition, but he's a guy who will probably find his way into the NFL, at the very least on a versatility standpoint, the fact that he can play guard, he can play center, little on the shorter side and doesn't have long enough arms to go out to tackle, but he's a guy who could be a very good guard or a very good center in the NFL.
There you go. Hey, don't forget this season's Remington Trophy presentation takes place January 14th, 2017 at the Rococo Theater in Lincoln. It's a great night. For tickets, get them now at RemingtonTrophy.com. You know, while we're talking, you know, before we get back into it, Colorado's leading their division in the Pac-12. I like to see Colorado playing good football again.
This is an insane year in regards to who's doing what, because I know ESPN did a breakdown of some of the different here's what the heck could happen. And they were talking about you could have the Big Ten title game could be Wisconsin-Penn State.
I know.
You could have I think they said the Pac-12 title game, theoretically, the way things are shaping up, especially with USC knocking off Washington this past week, could be Washington State against Colorado for the Pac-12 title.
And Washington State and Colorado play this week. Now that's gonna
rematch.
Well, and Colorado gets its final two games at home, which Folsom Field, once it's packed, is not an easy place to play.
I never lost there.
Ooh, I like watching games there, not because of the team, just because of the mountains in the background.
Oh God, it is. You know, Boulder, Colorado.
Yes, good weed.
I have never smoked weed in my life, but
anyway. I have. I didn't do it till my 30s, though.
Yeah, but you like porn, too.
I do.
Just saying. I'm just saying.
Now you're going to get people comment again.
Bless your heart. I'm just saying. Anyway, Boulder, Colorado, arguably, minus a place with a beach, because I'm kind of a beach guy, outside of the places with a beach, arguably top 10 most beautiful cities in America. It's
also freaking, one of the top expensive.
It's freaking gorgeous. It's probably top five in terms of as weird freaking people that live there.
Okay, I'll give you that.
They I mean, seriously, they kill JonBenet Ramsey and smoke pot.
Jesus.
The Boulder, Colorado in a nutshell right there.
All right, so Nebraska's at home, senior day. They're going to say goodbye to 28 active players, 30 in all, that they're going to say goodbye to. What do you remember about your senior day? Do you remember it, or was it a blur because you were so focused?
A little bit focused. We played Kansas, which it was one of those things you had to be careful. I mean, even my senior year, we were nursing an undefeated record. It was second straight undefeated regular season. My junior year, we went undefeated. Played at Kansas, and this was my junior season, which would have been the 93 season. We played at Kansas, came in, I believe, 9-0 into the Kansas game, and we deflected a two-point conversion attempt pass in the end zone to preserve a 21-20 win over a Glenn Mason coach Kansas team, which they had some very solid teams at the time. I mean, this was back when they had Gilbert Brown, Dana Stubblefield. They had some Kwame Lassiter at safety, played a bunch of years for Arizona Cardinals, June Henley at running back. They had some very good teams, John Jones at offensive guard. They were a good team early 90s with Glenn Mason coaching them. He left, they kind of fell off the planet.
True.
Then after Glenn left there. But they were a team that the year prior had taken us literally down to the wire, and we needed to deflect a two-point conversion pass to win that game. So that's we were taking them seriously. They came into Lincoln, and then we just ended up absolutely demolishing them. So the game wasn't even close. It's a little bittersweet. I mean, it's that last home game.
Here's the difference.
Here's my final point. I got to interrupt you.
Okay, no, that's fine, because I interrupted you.
I played during an era when it was an absolutely awesome period of time to play for Nebraska. Great coaching, outstanding athletes to play with. And so when that final home game comes around, it's a little bittersweet.
Well, and that's what I was going to bring up. You guys who graduated in 94 and even the 95 and the 97 team, because you won national titles, you guys, you've been out almost or over 20 years now. But you'd still make money off your name if you wanted to.
I don't know about that.
Do you get paid for appearances?
On occasion.
Okay, so you get paid for appearances. You're getting paid to do this podcast. So not much, but you get a lot. But what I'm saying is, you guys are still popular because you were able to reach that pinnacle. Big Eight championships. You didn't have a Big 12, but you had the Big Eight. You had the national championship. Is there anybody on this team that's gonna you look away and in 20 years gonna go, man, come do an appearance for us?
Hold on. Well, Tommy Armstrong.
You think so?
Yeah.
Okay.
And the reason why is because I think he was the quarterback during a period of transition. I'm hopeful. I'm awfully optimistic for Riley long-term. And when I say long-term, I'm talking next 5 to 7 years.
Well, based on his age, that's all he's going
to
be here.
And that's why I say 5 to 7 years. Armstrong's been an absolute warrior for this team. And I think he's a popular guy. He seems like an absolute stand-up kid. In terms of productivity, incredibly productive quarterback. I mean, you look at other 3-4 year starters that Nebraska's had, and I mean, you look at all of these guys like Turner Gill, Scott Frost, yeah. Tommy Frazier. There's all of these guys, Steve Taylor.
Of this class.
But there's all of these guys who, Taylor Martinez and Tommy Armstrong, I mean, guys who have some of the greatest numbers in terms of statistics in Nebraska football history. They're almost considered sort of second tier because the guys who people remember and the guys who have been elevated up on that pedestal are the guys who won conference titles, the guys who won national titles. Those are the guys that people remember. Tommy won't ever be that kind of guy, but he's probably one of those guys who I think could be, he's going to stick around in the consciousness a little bit. Running back, none of the guys currently on the team. Wide receiver, probably none of the guys currently on the team. Offensive line, probably none of the guys currently on the team.
Westerkamp
will.
And
but also, he's going to be one of those guys. For awesome mustache, but he's also one of these guys. He's like Tommy. He's a freaking gamer. He's one of these guys.
Nate Geary? I love to watch him play football.
Oh, I love. And, do you know who's had a great few weeks? Again, I'm throwing the Ohio State game out. That's the outlier that I'm tossing out the window. Banderas.
Yeah.
He's had a very, very good senior year, which I appreciate seeing because I know his dad. That's the scary thing is that I was only a year or two removed from playing with his dad. But I mean, Banderas has had a great senior year. He's been an incredibly productive linebacker.
And I don't think anybody will.
But it's one of these things. Are these guys the next Peters, the Wistroms, the Tomiches? I mean, guys like the Keneally's. They're not. And the thing that's going to hang over these guys' heads is that they weren't these 9, 10, 12 game winners. They weren't these guys winning conference titles.
But here's what I do like about these guys. I would say if you played during the Bill Callahan era, you are forgotten about soul. You really are. These guys, even though they played for, were recruited by Pelini, transition, yeah. They won't be forgotten.
No, they won't. And I feel bad. It's interesting you say that because that's like this little snippet era of Nebraska history that's completely forgotten.
It really is.
I feel horrible about it because there were some very, very good football
Zach
players.
Taylor.
Zach Taylor, Joe Gantz. Zach Lee was a solid quarterback. Zach Potter. You got a guy who is a defensive end in college and a tight end in the NFL.
With the exception of Ndamukong Suh.
Yeah, how many guys were good enough to completely flip-flop from one side of the ball to the other and make it in the NFL. That takes an insane athlete to be able to do that. And then nobody talks about these guys anymore.
I mean, it really is the forgotten about era.
Nobody thinks about Sue as a Callahan
guy. No, they don't. They think of him as a Pelini guy.
They think of Sue as a Pelini guy.
Because he really kind of came into his own. I think he became more of a dominating player.
He did. I wholeheartedly agree. But yeah, there were some outstanding football players in that era.
There was good talent in that era.
Todd Peterson and Nate Swift came in as some of the two most prolific receivers in Nebraska football history, finished with Pelini, but they came in as Callahan guys. And I mean, it's one of those, name me the top receivers in Nebraska football history. And I don't know if those guys are all that way up on the list.
So, yeah, and that's what I'm happy about is that sometimes when there's a coaching change, there's a certain era that can be forgotten about. I don't think that happens with the Pelini guys and the Mike Riley era because I think it was handled with such a better.
I agree. And I think the fans. Callahan always kind of kept everything at a little bit of distance.
Yep.
Pelini was one of these guys that he was a love him or hate him guy.
They loved him. Listen.
There were some people even at the bitter end loved him. There's people who hated him. It's not a case of where there's no middle ground on Pelini. And that makes the fact it made people pay attention to him and people are going to remember him and his players for that reason. There's a lot of people who's, I think most people's opinion on Bill Callahan is meh.
Yeah. There was never anybody who loved him except for Steve Peterson. And a lot of people hated him.
I don't even think people hated him.
I did. Hated him.
He didn't
like me either. And Peterson didn't like me
either. Yeah, but that's different because you had a very specific media-based relationship. Yeah. And it wasn't good.
It wasn't.
And there's a lot of guys. There's a lot of guys in the media who are in that exact same boat with you. I mean, it's not like that's like Travis in your own little personal one-man canoe in the in Nebraska coaches hate my ass right now. I mean, there's a lot of people in that boat with you. My thing with Callahan is just I think I'm saying purely from a fan perspective standpoint. I don't think most fans hated him. They were just like. Okay, this guy I think most fans' opinion is summed up by this guy just needs to go back to the NFL and coach O-line and do his occasional O-coordinating stint and never come back to college football.
And that's what he's doing right now.
Exactly. And that was most fans' opinion. It wasn't it's not a case of I don't dislike the guy. I just want him to move on and go back to the NFL.
And that's why I feel sorry for those players, and you brought up some very good ones in that era that are forgotten about.
And
I guarantee you right now, there's Nebraska fans going, bullshit, you guys don't know what you're talking about. We remember them. In the grand scheme of things, you really don't. And Zach Potter's a great example.
Oh, awesome freaking athlete. Insanely good player.
Which Dave and Zach, if you're listening, I'll go back to when Zach was in high school, Creighton Prep.
Told you he should have stayed on offense. NFL coaches were right.
That's right. I remember how his dad, Dave, was so pissed off at you that you said that he should stay on the offensive line. He'd have a 10-year career in the National Football League.
He was
going to
be the next Robert Gallery.
You called it, and they were mad at you for that. But I think they know.
Oh, I see Dave all.
I know.
I see Dave at the gym all the time now. So
coming into town is going to be on Senior Day. You play Maryland. Here's a team that I can't believe this. In all the years that Nebraska's played football, this is the first ever meeting between Maryland and Nebraska.
That's kind of interesting.
It is.
I would not have guessed that, but well, there you go.
Here's a team with two wins on the year in the Big Ten. Not a very good team. They're five. They're one away from bowl eligibility, but.
They're one of their team. One of these.
I like their unis. I'm one of the few people that like their unis.
I have been kind of okay with them. See, when they do the whole, we're going to try and plaster the flag of Maryland across our uniforms. I kind of dig it because I always thought Maryland had the best state flag of any state in the union. That's all I got for Maryland. Otherwise, otherwise, it's one of those, what the hell were you thinking firing Ralph Friggin?
Well, and that goes back, way back before you got rid of Friggin. Now you got a brand new coach this year. The guy was the defensive coordinator in Michigan last year. Remember, Scott Frost could have had this job. This job was offered to Scott Frost first.
Well, I had no idea.
Yes.
Seriously?
Yeah, no.
Maryland?
Serious. Maryland offered Scott. They said, Scott, the job's yours if you want it. And he took the Central Florida
job. God, I would have turned it down too.
Yes. I think Scott thought, and I think he's right, recruiting-wise, build something up, you have a much better chance to do it at Central Florida than you would at Maryland.
I wholeheartedly agree.
But, yes, the first guy—
Hey, by the way, Scott Frost.
Yes.
Knocked off Cincinnati.
And now bowl eligible.
Eligible.
So from winless a year ago to six wins now.
Yeah, they've done a very nice. He's done a great. He and his staff have done a great job out there. Here's my thing about Scott taking the job at Maryland, though. That's like Kevin Wilson going to Indiana.
Yeah,
it's one of these. This ain't going to work for a while. I mean, you might eventually get it turned around. Which, in Wilson's credit, I think they're kind of starting to turn it around. But that has been just an utter project.
Now you tell me if I'm wrong when it comes
and
to
Maryland's
coaching.
Maryland's the same way.
I look at Maryland, I look at Rutgers. You know, I think everybody looks at like a Kansas State, what Bill Snyder's been able to do at Kansas State. That really is, and even though he turned out to be an absolute scumbag of a human being, Art Briles at Baylor, those are really the exception, not the rule.
Agreed. There is a reason they call it the miracle in Manhattan.
Yes. And sometimes I think...
And now, again, from a personal standpoint, and I say this, and let me rephrase it. I'm not talking about personal integrity here, which Bill Snyder has. He leaves a slime trail of personal integrity on the ground behind him when he walks, which probably is pretty... That's kind of an oxymoron.
Is that a compliment?
No, I meant that as a compliment.
Okay.
It is an oxymoronic metaphor. But the guy is one of the greatest human beings on the planet, but he and Art Briles, I hate lumping them together. The two of them are absolute genius coaches, because Baylor went from an absolute zero to, they're okay. Moment Art Briles hit the door.
Yeah. Now, having RG3 didn't hurt.
It didn't hurt at all. But then when he lost RG3, what happened? They kept winning.
They kept winning.
And they kept winning big.
They probably won more.
I agree. I would not deny that.
But what he turned a blind eye to was an absolute travesty of justice.
Not going to deny that either. That's why I said, in terms of personal integrity, I hope Snyder doesn't feel bad about the fact I'm lumping him in with Art Briles. But in terms of pure coaching ability, those two guys might be two of the best.
But what I'm saying is, when you get a guy like Chris Ash who takes the Rutgers job, or you get a guy that takes the Maryland job, your work is ahead of you. I think Scott Frost said, okay, I'm going to be a head coach. People are going to want me. Where can I put myself the best position to win? That's like whoever takes the Purdue job. Are you kidding me? Good luck.
I hear it's going to be Craig Bohl.
No, they're not going to take it. They're not going to take another Wyoming coach.
I'm just saying, Joe Tiller kicked ass.
Okay, but still, you're that's a tough job to take. When Tom Herman left Ohio State, he knew he could go to
where can
Houston,
I go that you've got a recruiting base
and a chance to win that has a true success. And I just think Scott was smart to go.
I thought it was a genius move to go there.
Okay, but I mean Maryland.
Here's my thoughts on places like Maryland, Rutgers. It's like Northwestern. If you got a guy like Pat Fitzgerald, highly, highly intelligent, great motivator, probably the best recruiter a school like that could ever even remotely hope to have. You've won the lottery.
Yeah.
You know, Gary Barnett did wonders at Northwestern as well, too. But Gary Barnett was one of those guys. Moment that Colorado job came along, Barnett was out of there. Pat Fitzgerald, he's never going to leave Northwestern.
Which is sad.
Yeah.
Because I think he could win someplace else.
Fitzgerald?
Yeah.
I don't think so.
You don't think so?
I think so. I think he goes any place else, he flops. I don't know why. It's just it's a fit thing, and I can't explain what I mean by that word.
I know what you mean.
But it's a fit thing for him there, and I think if he tries to leave and go someplace else, it's just not going to work as well. Greg Schiano at Rutgers.
Yeah.
You had a home state kid who was his alma mater. It was a great fit. And what did he have him do? He had him knocking off West Virginia on primetime.
But they were
TV.
Also in a different league.
I get that, but a lot of these teams have shifted around. But he was winning against some very good teams.
Yeah,
I think if Greg Schiano had never left Rutgers,
they'd be in a better position to compete in the Big Ten, right?
Far better than they'd be doing right now.
Well, because you would have the consistency there. I mean,
I can't remember who wrote the article. I read an outstanding article on why Jim Delaney took on Maryland and Rutgers, and the point of the article was I don't think Delaney ever really wanted more great teams in the Big Ten. They needed a couple of tomato cans. They needed numbers purely so you'd have teams for people to beat.
Well, not only that, but you also get TV eyes. I mean,
there's recruiting, there's TV. You're pulling in the East Coast. You're pulling in New York by having those schools. You get that whole Mid-Atlantic state segment of the population watching. Now, I get that. My point is that I don't think Delaney was looking at Rutgers and Maryland going, oh, these are going to be awesome schools, other than maybe Maryland basketball.
You know, Maryland did beat Scott Frost in UCF 30-24 back in September. They've beaten Howard. They beat Florida International.
Let me ask you a question. Yeah. You are a Big Ten team.
Yeah.
That's not beating Central Florida. They snuck past Central Florida by less than a touchdown.
So they've beaten Howard. They beat FIU, which FIU's horrible, but in 3 years could be playing for the national championship because they hired Butch Davis.
Sanctions will follow 3 years after.
He always gets out of Dodge before the scandals really hit Miami, but he did get fired at North Carolina.
The guy can code. Yeah, but I think North Carolina, that was a scandal thing too.
They were playing
some pretty good football.
But once you start scratching the surface, you realize that scandal went to the basketball team, to the football team, went everywhere.
They had a lot of issues at the time.
They beat Purdue 50-7. Then they've beaten Michigan State, but they lost to Indiana 42-36, got beat by Michigan 59-3, lost to Ohio State 62-3.
Isn't that the score that Ohio State beats everybody? That's their third 62-3 game.
So really since October, November have not been good. They've lost to Penn State 38-14. They lost to Minnesota 31-10. They lost to Indiana 42-36. Lost to Michigan, as I mentioned, 59-3. Lost to Ohio State 62-3. I mean,
they're not a very good team. Here's the thing that granted the games in Lincoln, which I think is a huge boost for Nebraska. Nebraska's offensive line still beat the hell up.
Tommy Armstrong, not healthy.
Tommy Armstrong beat the heck up. The defensive line. You know, we haven't talked about the lack of depth on that defensive line a ton, but you had an entire starting defensive line basically go to the NFL, transfer, or quit before the season started. They are thin on depth there as well, too. They've just been remarkably lucky when it comes to injuries up to this point. So the defensive line, they're not in a whole lot of better shape than that offensive line is when it comes to the depth issue. So I worry. I truly think Nebraska is one of those teams. On any given day, the ball bounces right. You have some turnovers. You have a few stupid penalties. Special teams has a couple of big mistakes. And all of a sudden, Maryland's one of these teams that if they stick around and stick around and stick around, like anybody in this day and age, they could knock you off late in the fourth quarter. So I'm not going to say Nebraska should kick the crap out of them. Nebraska should win, but I don't know if you're going to see a drastically different game than what you saw last week against Minnesota.
Or maybe against Illinois, where you know they're clearly better, but the score may not reflect that.
Yeah, exactly. Indiana, same kind of thing. Nebraska was, they're a much better team talent-wise – than Indiana, but a few injuries, lack of depth, all of a sudden there's some chinks in the armor.
Expert analysis, expert opinion from the one, the only, Dr. Rob Zadiskin. Make sure to follow him on Twitter at DocTalkSports. Please take the time to rate us on Podbean. Give us a review on iTunes. We'd appreciate that very much, good or bad. Anything could help. Don't forget there's a comment section located at the bottom of the Podbean page. Feel free to leave those comments. I try to respond the best I can. I want to thank Dave Remington and the Remington Trophy for being the presenting sponsor of the Husker Doc Talk podcast. Remington Trophy presentation coming up January 14, 2017 at the Rococo Theater in Lincoln. Get your tickets at RemingtonTrophy.com. We'll be back next week as we talk about the Black Friday showdown. That is Iowa, Nebraska. Rob and I have been waiting to talk about this game all year long. Thanks for listening to the best Husker podcast out there, the Husker Doc Talk podcast.